Blog Talk Radio.
Do you know anything about the initiative to expand Medicaid? I have a lot of questions.
So did I. I just finished a book that helped me understand the unintended consequences of Medicaid expansion.
How can I get a copy?
Idaho State Senator Stephen Thame wrote the book entitled Road to Venezuela, The Unintended Consequences of Medicaid Expansion. You can download a free copy by going to roadtovenezuela.com.
Roadtovenezuela.com. I'll go get a copy.
Paid for by Thame for Senate, Sherry Thame Treasurer.
Good morning. This is Don Allen Rico and Senator Stephen Thame. How are you doing, Senator Thame?
Doing good. How are you, Don Allen?
I'm pretty good, thank you. We'd like to welcome everybody to our discussion this morning on Roadmap to Freedom. Our topic is the problem with ideologies. And we want to find out how this affects our basic freedoms and what we can do to ensure to remain a free people. Tell us a little bit about what are problems with ideologies?
Well, ideologies, according to Jordan Peterson, are simplistic representations of a complex world, and so it's almost a shorthand way of looking at the world, especially when we're talking about political issues, poverty, healthcare, education, some of these issues that we face. And what happens and what's going on right now and what's somewhat fueling the political divide is on the extremes where you find people that try to implement ideologies. Ideologies are like principles or simplistic representations, and they really don't in and of themselves create policy. They help in creating policy, but what happens when if you have a picture of a valley, and then on both sides of it you have a plateau, and on one side is one ideology, and on the other side is the other ideology, so kind of like a left-right view. These people on the left or on the right have an ideology they're trying to promote. On the left, they see a problem. They want to create a government program. For example, just this morning, Kamala Harris introduced legislation. Yeah, I read about her introducing legislation that every person making less than $100,000 a year would receive $6,000 in subsidies. And so she sees an issue of poverty, people being on the, struggling to make ends meet. I mean, that's an issue. And what she sees, and in her ideology that government is the key, she wants to create a government program and throw money at it. And it's laid over another ideology, which is prosperity is a function of spending money. If you have money to spend, you're not poor. So ideologies in some way reveal your basic assumptions. So the two basic ideologies, well, and if you get to the common sense reason why that won't work, prosperity is a function of production, not of spending money, not of consumption. That's the basic short answer. Poor people, just giving them money won't, will they buy more drugs? Will they? Some will use it very appropriately. Some won't. But what they need is not a handout. This is just the glorified panhandling, really, is they need help to improve their skill level so they can demand a higher wage. Getting out of poverty is something that requires the ability to earn an income. And maybe I'm revealing my ideology, However, I'm not making a policy out of it. You know, when you make a policy, you have to get into the details and really make it work. So I'll give you an example of that in a minute. So the two basic ideologies is on the left, we need more government. We need more government spending so the people can be taken care of. Increasing the size of government will go from health care, like in Prop 2 in Idaho this year. Education needs more money. It's always more money, 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 money. On the right, it's government should do less. In fact, last night I gave this little example, and one of the people running, you know, about ideologies and the extremes are the ones getting most of the media because they make the most outlandish claims and they're the most entertaining, but it doesn't really help us fight and solve problems. My opponent says, well, I'm one of those extremists. Because, she really believes in limited government, but when it comes to her problem, which is abortion, that she wants to do away with, she wants to give government pretty much unlimited power to stop abortion. Now, I don't mind stopping abortion, but she's, you know, I've asked her before, so how are you going to stop abortion? Well, I'm going to pass a law. And what's the law going to be? No details. That's what I'm getting at. Is that
right?
The principle might be very, very good. I'm not saying that these principles are bad, but people who become ideologues on the left and the right think that simply purely implementing the principle will result in a solution to the problem. Well, life's a little bit more complex than that. It really reminds me of the fundamentalist Islam problem. Their basic philosophy can be summarized in an Old Testament scripture, which they're descendants of Abraham, so they take some pleasure in some of the teachings of the Old Testament. One of them says that if you obey the law that I give you this day, you shall be the most powerful nation on earth, basically. It's in Deuteronomy 28, I think, verse 1 or 2 or 3, somewhere in there. And how that played out in Jewish culture, especially at about 70 AD at the fall of Jerusalem, where supposedly 1 million Jews were slaughtered by the Romans under, I think it was Titus, might have been somebody else, but they said, well, we just need to obey more strictly, more fundamentally, the law of Moses, and God will protect us. The error they made was, one, they were telling God what he was going to do, and they were determining what obedience to the law of Moses meant. Two fundamental, assumptions that you probably should be careful about. So Muslims of today, the fundamentalist ones, say, well, Islam is not, the center of the political universe. It's not, they're not the most advanced nations. They're not the most powerful. Well, it must be because we're not living Islam strictly enough. So this is what I talk about ideologies. Is when they see a problem, they say, rather than go, well, what's the cause and effect of the problem? What can we do to actually implement a solution? They say, we need to live our ideology more clearly. Well, living ideologies clearly and more strictly leads to violence. It's just the way it is. And then we're starting to see that in the United States where we're getting ideologues on the left and the right, mostly the left, by the way, that are like Antifa, yeah, that are resorting to violence. So let me tell you what one of my ideologies was, because I've got an ideology. The difference that I have is that I recognize that solutions are found in the middle. It's found by people who are willing to listen, to talk, to try to find win-win solutions. Ideologies reject listening. That's why on many college campuses, they don't even let conservatives come and speak because they don't think they have anything to say, or they think it's going to challenge the way their worldview. And some of these college students are so emotionally weak that someone challenging the way they view the world is going to send them to depression or something. I mean, really? We can't.
Yeah.
I thought universities were about challenging assumptions and looking at the world through different lenses. So it's really it's strange to me. So one of my ideologies about education is that it is the parents' responsibility. It's not the state's. You know, if we have public education, the state gets involved in it, fine. That's what we've decided to do. But the weakness of public education is that all the decisions are made outside of the home, not inside the home. There's very few decisions a parent can make in a public school. You know, they can leave public education if they have enough resources and go to private school or homeschool. But if they're, you know, like most people, really don't have where both parents work, they don't have the ability to have any of those choices. So they have to go to the public education system. Well, within that public education system, the voice of parents is quite minimized. And in many places in the United States, for security reasons or whatever other reason they want to say, parents can't even go inside the school, which is a fascinating thought. Anyway,
yeah. So you don't have much say with what's going on with your kids.
Right. So, okay, that's my ideology. And so what most people, the conclusion most people come to that have my ideology is they say, well, we shouldn't have public education, so we need to abolish it. Well, I look at that and I say, well, that's not going to happen. And secondly, who am I to say, and what wisdom do I have to tell everybody else in Idaho, for example, that we're not going to have public schools? Well, a lot of people want public schools. So once you let your ideology or your principles can guide you, but to actually create a policy, it takes some effort. And this effort basically was a 25-year effort. And then eventually the first effort was to allow students to challenge classes. And the school district could still get paid even if the student challenged the class and was able to demonstrate that they knew the material. Well, that didn't seem maybe like a big step, but it empowered the student to control their own education to some degree. And you know what the biggest opposition, the argument in opposition to that was?
I don't know.
You probably don't. There's no way that you should know this. But the senator who was opposed to this, he said, if this gets started, it'll never end. And he said, we can't do this because we don't know what we're teaching in public schools. So this was 10 or 12 years ago. And I told him, well, that's one of the reasons that I was doing this is because we really don't know what we're doing in public schools. You know, things have changed some. You have end-of-course assessments and testing and different things, so we have a little idea of standards. But at the time, he said, we don't know what we're teaching. I said, yeah, that's kind of scary, don't you think? So we've got a public education system parents aren't in control of, and the system doesn't even know what it's teaching. The second one was to allow students to take summer classes that the state would pay for. And most of them were online classes. And in fact, to begin with, all of them were online classes. And by taking these online classes in this like 7th, 8th, 9th grade in the summer, it'd free up some of their schedule during the school year so they could take more difficult classes. So I was trying to allow students to escape the mediocrity of regular high school and challenge themselves if they so desired by taking classes from colleges or harder classes at the high school where they self-selected to you know, challenge themselves to be better learners. And the next really important bill had to do with paying for dual credit classes so they could take college classes in high school. Now, some people, so the ideologists, the ideologues on the right would say, well, that's a government program and it's wrong. Government shouldn't be involved in education. Okay? True, right? I mean, from my perspective, I'm not a real proponent of public education in a perfect world, but people want public education, so I'll go there. I mean, I'm not going to argue with them. What can we do to make it better? That's my perspective. So I agree
absolutely
with your argument in many ways. But I said, well, you're allowing freedom of choice by these students. Imagine they can at New Plymouth High School, they offered Spanish 3. Very few students were interested in Spanish 3. They offered dual credit Spanish, and about four or five times as many students decided to take it because they're looking for their future and they were able to challenge themselves. So that the difference between the ideologue, it's more of a black-white, and someone who's driven or guided by principles but gets down and involved in the weeds of policy is in the Advanced Opportunities Program. And I will tell you that last year, 58% of seniors took a college-level course, and about 220,000 credits were earned. So that would average somewhere around 5 credits per senior, which isn't a lot. Well, actually less than that, about 10, because only 58% of the seniors took advantage. But that put us at a number 5 ranking in the nation. This little simple idea.
Yeah, absolutely.
The cost very little has put us number 5 ranking in preparing kids for college or other post-secondary options. So the budget this next year on the program, it's going to grow by about another 20%, they're thinking. So this is just getting started. We had, when we first began, there were 12,000 students that took advantage. That was 4 years ago. Last year, there were 32,000. So in 20% growth, I don't know, what is that going to be, another 38,000 maybe this next year. So when we get up to, maybe 45, 50,000 students taking advantage, we're getting closer to where we want to be, and we'll probably be in number 1 ranking. So
awesome.
The problem with ideologies is it doesn't allow you to get in the weeds. When we talk about abortion or immigration or, some of these really difficult issues where ideologues dominate the discussion, you're not solving the problem, and there doesn't seem you just can't solve the problems when the ideologues, tell each other how righteous they are.
All right. Okay, we're talking about the problem with ideologies. If you're listening, you can call in and ask a question at 516-387-1480. That's 516-387-1480. Well, tell us a little bit about, Senator Thain, tell us a little bit about in finding a middle ground and finding, not just simply banning the public school education. And you said this has brought you to number 5 in the nation as far as performance of seniors. Is that correct?
Yeah, kids that have passed an ACT or an SAT test, we're ranked number 5 in the nation. And supposedly passing an ACT or an SAT indicates college readiness. So that's not a bad determinant, you know, a measure. It's an outcome-based measure. Not to get distracted, but a lot of those that critique public education are critiquing, especially in Idaho, critique the amount of inputs that we put into education. They want higher teacher salaries. They want another year of school called pre-kindergarten. They want more programs. They want more money. To them, it's all about inputs. And I'm interested in outputs, which is what the private sector is interested in. I don't care how much, you know, I bale hay for other people, and I don't charge my customers based on how expensive a tractor I have or how much twine I use or how much fuel I use. Or, you know, I don't determine the value by how much I spend. I determine the value by how good a hay I bale, the outcome.
Right. And how many you can get done.
So this discussion about quality of education in Idaho, I think, is driven quite often by leftist ideologues who say, we're not spending enough money. Well, who says spending money is the key? Evidently,
yeah.
Idahoans tend to agree with the Republican Party on this one because we're getting good results. You know, we're not where we want to be. I still think there's several things we need to do, but they involve giving parents choices, not spending more money. Well, you have
well,
to spend
and,
money too.
And you got and Idaho has moved up from about 20 somewhere in the 20-25 somewhere there to number 5 in how short of a time?
3 years.
In 3 years. Yet you spend the least amount of money on education in all of the states. Well, you're about 40th, or we're about 40th or something like that, isn't that right? I mean 48th,
well, we're
right?
Probably we flip back and forth with Utah, 49-50. Yeah, we're pretty close to the bottom on per pupil spending. But the city that spends the most, which is Washington D.C., is the last place in preparing kids for life after high school. So money is not the issue. There's actually 4 issues. You need quality teachers. You do need money. I'm not saying you don't need money, because all things being equal, more money is better. But what most public education debates ignore is 2 other factors, the role of parents and the role of the student. Does the student want to learn? And do parents provide the basic discipline and stability in the home in order for students to do well at school? And that's where Washington, D.C. falls down, as do many other big city places, is the stability of the home is lacking. Now, there are wonderful educators that can overcome the instability of the home, but it's a Herculean effort. Very difficult to be done. What disturbs me is that in our policies, we don't be more proactive in trying to encourage the growth of functional families, so we had more kids coming from functional families. And so these issues of poverty programs, Medicaid, education, health care, all of these issues work together to create an environment in the individual. And
exactly.
I think one of the ideologies on the left is they view people as masses, not as individuals, but we can just pass laws to manipulate this group of people. And on the right, they basically say, well, the state shouldn't have anything to do with individuals. That's an issue of private charities and their personal responsibility. Well, one of the things I'd like to make a point, a lot of conservatives point out the Constitution. And in the original Constitution, federal government didn't have any responsibilities in education, health care, poverty. And I agree with that. However, they make the mistake of applying those same principles to the state. States have a lot more flexibility. We're not prohibited from having poverty programs. And the other main issue that I think conservatives makes the conservative argument less weaker is they don't have a plan to unwind the federal big government programs. They just want them to go away.
Just once again, it's just abolish without any thought of what the consequences might be.
Exactly. So that's an ideological perspective. If it wasn't here, we'd be better off. Okay, it's true. If we didn't have all these federal social programs, I could make the case we'd be better off. But we do. How do we unwind from it? An ideology doesn't tell you that.
Right.
It gives you the goal, but not the path.
So basically what you're saying is you've got the two platforms on, I mean, the two plateaus on each side, and people have got to get down in the valley and get to work and finding the solutions.
Yeah. And so the left has something to offer. The right has something to offer. Neither one are evil. So there are evil people on both sides. There's evil people everywhere. But generally speaking, if you listen and try to find win-win solutions that empower families, then we'll be fine.
Okay. So it's a matter of just rolling up the sleeves and getting to work to find solutions that help people. You know, you're right. The fact is that there are people in poverty, and you can't just simply throw money at them and keep them there. You've got to teach them how to get out. And a lot of times go ahead.
Yeah, and you can't simply ignore them either.
Right.
Which is what a lot of people on the right seem to want to do, is just ignore them and say, well, this is their responsibility. Well, young children, when they first start walking, we give them a lot of encouragement. We spend time with them. Everybody needs a little bit of encouragement, but they don't need to be carried through life. I mean, if a mother never helped a child walk because they were afraid they'd fall over and hit their head and they carried them, well, that would be a burden that would be overwhelming, and it would deny that child the ability to reach his or her full potential as life went on. Can you imagine carrying a high school kid from class to class because they don't know how to walk? Well, that's what these federal poverty programs are doing.
Yeah, instead of teaching them to be independent, they teach them to be dependent.
Yeah.
Well,
I think
appreciate
our time
is about your time. Yeah, I appreciate your time this morning, and hope people can kind of understand where you're going and what you know, that we really need to work on this to find solutions. Thanks for being with us this morning, and we'll talk to you next Friday.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Donnell.
You betcha. This program has been brought to you by Senator Stephen Thane, and we'll just listen to this clip for just a second.
Do you know anything about the initiative to expand Medicaid? I have a lot of questions.
So did I. I just finished a book that helped me understand the unintended consequences of Medicaid expansion.
How can I get a copy?
Idaho State Senator Stephen Thane wrote the book entitled Road to Venezuela, The Unintended Consequences of Medicaid Expansion. You can download a free copy by going to roadtovenezuela.com.
Roadtovenezuela.com. I'll go get a copy.
Paid for by Thane for Senate, Sherry Thane Treasurer.
Roadmap to Freedom is a production of Q Ford Productions, copyright 2018, Sabremont Incorporated, all rights reserved.